To display the spectrum, you normally take the log because there could be a few values, typically the 0,0 frequency value that is very large, and the other values will be very small. And to display the small values on the monitor or your display device, it is better to take the log so the large values are compressed and the small values are increased relatively, and to show the details of the smaller values. And because FKL could be 0, you add 1, and what is shown is this quantity. Now, if you want, you can multiply that with 10. If you want to get the values in dB, in 1D signal analysis, you would take 20 log to base 10 of the spectrum, or 10 log to base 10 of the spectrum square. But we don't use that in image processing because the result is shown as an image, and to get a relative impression of the frequency domain components, multiplying this by 10 or 20 doesn't really matter because you'll be stretching it to fit the dynamic range of the display. It is also common to fold or shift the spectrum to bring the 0,0 frequency to the center, which is what I explained earlier. Now, folding of the spectrum could be achieved by multiplying FMN with minus 1 to the power of m plus n. You can take the Fourier transform and shift the parts of the spectrum, as I showed earlier, but if you don't want to do that, before taking the FFT, you multiply the image FMN with minus 1 to the power of m plus n. And because m and n are integers, it means you simply change the sign of every other pixel. So you keep one pixel the same sign as the original, the next one make it negative, keep the next one the same, next you make negative, and then repeat it for the other dimension. And then that is related to the shifting property. If k0 l0 is equal to n over 2, then exponential j2 pi over n k0 m plus l0 n, which is shifting the frequency in the, shifting the spectrum in the frequency domain by this quantity, it'll be equal to minus 1 to the power of m plus n. So FMN to the power of minus 1, FMN times minus 1 to the power of m plus n will give you the spectrum F shifted by n over 2 in the frequency domain, which is related to the property I mentioned earlier, this property. So if you take k0 l0 equal to n over 2, which is, I'll go back, bear with me. This is the spectrum without shifting, and you want to take that point and shift here. So this part will come here. So that is shifting by half of the width of the spectrum, n over 2, and the same for the vertical. You take this part and bring it here. So that can be done. Just a moment. By using this property, shifting the spectrum, multiplying the image with an exponential, you want k0 l0 to be n over 2. And if you do that, the exponential function is only minus 1 and plus 1. So you multiply the image with this function, and because m and n are integers, that means simply changing the sign of every other pixel. And then the spectrum is centered or shifted as you wish. But MATLAB has a function called FFT shift. So take the FFT of the image, then take FFT shift of that, so you get the spectrum centered. There are many of these functions that have quite a lot of interesting theory behind. And some 15 years ago, we had to program each one of these steps in our programs. Now, I've been writing programs for many years. When I did my graduate studies in India, that was about 30 years ago. So we had to write our own routines to compute the Fourier transform. The FFT routine was available. But we had to do every step in our programs ourselves. But now in MATLAB, all of that is reduced to just one or two lines of code. So MATLAB has simplified computation and processing of signals and images significantly as compared to what it was, let's say, 20, 25 years ago. So if you simply use FFT in MATLAB, there's a lot happening behind it. And if you simply use FFT shift, there is a lot happening behind that too, which is what I described just now. So you need to appreciate the complexity of the underlying theory behind each MATLAB command. And when you write your reports, just a point about that, because recently I made that comment to one of my students. When you write your report for the project that you'll be doing, don't give me the code. I don't need your code. And please don't explain your algorithm in terms of MATLAB commands, but instead give the actual mathematical expressions, because one MATLAB command means many of these steps. And I would like you to explain your image processing algorithm in terms of the underlying mathematics and signal or image processing procedures and not the condensed MATLAB commands. Okay? So rotation of an image is something that is unique to image processing. Shifting a signal, you can do in 1D or in 2D. There is no problem. The implications are similar. But a 1D signal that's a function of one dimension, that is time, can only be shifted in one axis, or you can shift in two directions, but along only one axis. An image could be shifted in one axis or in the other or both, and it could also be rotated in the same plane. Rotation is unique to images, and there is no one-dimensional counterpart. If FM1N1, or if FMN and FKL are a Fourier transform pair, then if FM1N1 represents a rotated image, with M1 being M cos theta plus N sin theta, and N1 being minus M sin theta and plus N cos theta, which is rotation of the image MN to the coordinate system M1, N1, rotated by theta, then the Fourier transform is also similarly rotated by the same rotation. So FKL becomes FK1L1, where K1L1 are rotated versions of K and L by the same angle theta, which is what I showed earlier. If you rotate the bar, the Fourier transform is also rotated in the same way. Scaling, you know from 1D, if you scale an image FAMBN, then the Fourier transform FKL is scaled by the inverse 1 over A, 1 over B in the frequency, and scaled in magnitude by 1 over magnitude of AB. So if you compress an image, take a big image and make it small, you are expanding the frequency domain. The frequency spectrum is expanded. And because the same energy is spread on a wider band of frequencies, the amplitude of each frequency component is reduced. So A and B here are scalar scaling factors. The shrinking of an image leads to an expansion of its spectrum. So there is more high frequency content. If an image is enlarged, then the opposite happens. The spectrum is shrunk. I showed some examples already with the rectangle function. When you have a linear shift invariant system, you know that the output is the convolution of the input image with the impulse response function or the point spread function. So GMN, the output, is HMN star FMN. Now I'm writing this in discrete representation. I have mixed both continuous and discrete representation here. There are some that are easier in discrete, some that are easier in the continuous domain, but they are applicable to both continuous and discrete signals. So GMN is the convolution of the input FMN with HMN, and the discrete convolution is shown here as a summation instead of the integral I wrote earlier. sum on alpha beta going 0 to n minus 1, h alpha beta, f m minus alpha n minus beta. So just integral, instead of integral, you have sum. If you take the Fourier transform, and I would like you to work this yourself, at the end of each chapter, I have a number of problems. And I would like you to work them out on your own. As I mentioned yesterday, in this course, I'm not assigning any homework for you. But it is up to you to work out the problems at the end of each chapter. If you go to my website, I mentioned that there are some old tests from previous years as I run in Calgary in this course. In Calgary, I give two tests in each term or course. You will have only one exam, which will be equivalent to two of those tests. And those questions in the tests are based upon the problems at the end of the chapters. And I have given also, I have posted on my website the solution to two of the tests, handwritten and scanned. And when you write your tests, you will also have to write by hand because I will be asking, I could possibly ask some questions dealing with mathematical manipulations, and it may not be easy for you to do it in Word or LaTeX during the exam. So you'll be writing your exam by hand, and you'll have to do some hand calculations and derivations. And there could be some questions that require descriptive answers. So please be prepared for that. And to prepare for that, I urge you to work on the problems at the end of each chapter. You could do with your friend together in teams of two or three. It doesn't matter how you do it. But please prepare for that. Otherwise, in the exam, your hand may not move to write these equations. You need to practice that. Some of these properties I have just stated here, and you must have seen these in one dimension in signal processing, but I would like you to work out these relationships by hand and make sure that when you have a convolution and take the Fourier transform, the result is the multiplication of the Fourier transforms and so on. So when two images are convolved, their Fourier transforms get multiplied. So the Fourier transform maps convolution to multiplication, or multiplication to convolution. This is a double-ended arrow. Now there is an important property here. The convolution multiplication property with the discrete Fourier transform implies periodic or circular convolution. Because the discrete Fourier transform of a sample signal, of course, results in the important implication I mentioned earlier, that the spectrum and the signal, or the original image, are both periodic. So convolution must be periodic or circular convolution and not linear convolution. I hope you remember the distinction from your 1D signal processing course. And I'll show some examples later. There will be some examples of convolution coming up later. Circular convolution may be made equivalent to linear convolution by zero padding. A basic property that you must remember is that if you have a signal of N1 samples, another signal of N2 samples length or duration, if you convolve them using linear convolution, the result will have N1 plus N2 minus 1 samples. The result is longer than either input signal if you use linear convolution. But if you use periodic or circular convolution, periodic convolution is defined when both signals have the same period. So if you have a signal of duration n and another signal of duration or period n, and you use periodic convolution, the result is also periodic with the same period n. So the duration of the result is equal to the duration of the two input signals with periodic convolution. On the other hand, if you have a signal of n samples and another signal of n samples, and you do linear convolution, the result will have 2n minus 1 samples. So if you want linear convolution and you make use of this property of the Fourier transform, that is, you take the Fourier transform of one signal, take the Fourier transform of the other, multiply the two, take the inverse transform, then what you get is periodic convolution. If you want that to be equal to linear convolution, then you must make the Fourier transforms longer. So if you have two signals of duration n1 and n2, you add zeros or pad zeros and make both of them equal to m samples, where m is greater than n1 plus n2 minus 1. And then take the Fourier transforms of duration m or length m. Then you multiply them like this, take the inverse transform, then the result has the room to expand to include n1 plus n2 minus 1 samples. And then circular convolution will give you the same result as linear convolution by zero padding. So this is an important property that you have to bear in mind if you implement convolution using the FFT. Okay? Multiplication of images in the space domain leads to convolution in the image in the frequency domain. So if two images F1 and F2 are multiplied, then F1 UV star F2 UV is the result in the frequency domain. This is convolution. So their spectra get convolved. Now, multiplication of images does happen. Some types of noise could be multiplicative, where the noise value is dependent upon the signal value. So signal-dependent noise could be multiplicative. Earlier I showed you the model GXY is FXY plus eta XY, additive noise. But there could be multiplicative noise where GXY is FXY multiplied with eta XY, or you could have a situation like this where GXY is FXY multiplied with SXY. I'm sorry for this notation. F and S, they sound similar, but F is, in this case, a light source. I'm sorry, F is the image and S is the source, light source. When I take an image of you, I'll be putting some light on you and I'm measuring the reflectance. So what my camera will take a picture of is the pattern of your reflectance or reflectivity. It is assumed that the light that is shown on you is uniform. So the result will indicate the pattern of reflectivity of you, which is your picture. In the case of a transparency, we don't have a transparency here. We had one of those overhead projectors. But if there is a transparency, then on the transparency I would write something, and then to show you, I would put that through a light source, and what you see is the light that is being shown multiplied with the transparency, and that is what you see there. So in a way, the same thing is happening. The picture on the screen is going somewhere, and let's imagine that light is being shown through a transparency, and what you see there is the product of the light intensity field with the transmittivity or transmittance of the transparency. Now, it is assumed that the light source is uniform over the entire field of the image. If it is uniform, there is no problem. But if there is some shading, and that doesn't happen here, but in some of the older overhead projectors, you would have seen some yellow pattern on the edges. If the light source is not uniform over the entire field, then you see some shading or shadowing. That is what is shown here. The result there is the product of the original image, which is the transmittivity, that is what you are interested in, these things that you see here, multiplied with the source, SXY. If the source is constant, then this is simply a factor S, independent of X and Y. That is what you would like. But if it is not, then you must do something to remove it. And to remove it, you have to remember that it is a product. So you cannot apply a filter like a high-pass or low-pass filter, because their Fourier transforms are convolved and not added. So if SXY is absolutely uniform with a value A, its Fourier transform, the Fourier transform of a constant, is a delta function. Fourier transform SUV is A delta UV. Delta is just an impulse. So convolution with an impulse has no effect, except the factor A will be multiplied with the spectrum of the original signal or image. So there is no problem and you get the result. Otherwise, the Fourier transform that you observe of the observed image is convolution of the original image's Fourier transform with the spectrum of the source, which could be a low-pass filter or which could have some patterns that will affect the appearance of the image. So this cannot be separated using linear filters because the two are convolved. And later on I'll explain, we will not get into that. There are homomorphic filters where you could separate convolved signals by using the logarithm and then the Fourier transform. So it is possible to separate them using generalized linear filters or nonlinear filters. The correlation between two images, FMN and GMN, is defined in this manner. Gamma FG alpha beta is the sum over all space of FMN multiplied with GM plus alpha N plus beta. So here you're taking one image and taking the other, shifting one with respect to the other, and then multiplying point by point. So it is similar to convolution, except that there is no reversal of one of the signals here. So if you compare with convolution, you will see you have M plus alpha, N minus beta, but in the other case, you will have alpha minus M, beta minus N, with MN being the summation variables. The result here has the variables alpha, beta, which will be the shift applied here. So when you have two images and you want to ask what is common between them, you could take the dot product between the two of them, take the projection of one onto another, point by point multiplication and addition. A dot product tells you what is common between the two vectors. But there could be some shift in the details present in one image with respect to the same details in the other image. And if you want to evaluate the projection for different shifts, then you have to shift one of the images with respect to the other. So you get the dot product, which is the projection, which in this case is called the correlation of one image with respect to the other, including a shift parameter, and the result is a function of the shift alpha beta. Correlation is useful in comparing images, where there could be something common between the two, and if there is something common between the two, then the correlation will show a large value for the corresponding shift. Similar to the property of convolution, I would again ask you to take the Fourier transform of this, apply the Fourier transform, and you will see that the Fourier transform of the correlation, which I have written here as capital gamma, is the product of the two spectra, F and G, but with one of them conjugated, G star. Whereas in the case of convolution, we got the product FG, FUV, GUV. I'm showing here in the discrete coordinates, but the same thing is true in the continuous domain. But here, because there is no reversal, you get G star, which is the conjugate. Let me just check where we are. I'll just do this much and we'll take a short break. If you normalize the correlation, we get what is called a correlation coefficient. And I have removed the shift here. I have just written gamma with no shift. FMN, GMN, multiplied and added, whereas here I included a shift, plus alpha plus beta. If you drop the shift, gamma here is multiplying point by point FMN, GMN, and then adding over all pixels, sum on M and N. So this is just like a dot product of two vectors multiplying point by point, that is taking the projection of one onto another. And in the denominator, you are just normalizing by the geometric mean of the total energy of each image. Some f square mn and some g square mn and the square root of their product. So with this normalization, you get a value between 0 and 1. And you could include a shift gm plus alpha n plus beta and then put gamma alpha beta there if you want. If the images are aligned and registered, then with the same scale and orientation, you do not have to worry about shifting. Otherwise, you have to include shift and rotation also if you need to take care of that. So this is known as a correlation coefficient, and it is useful in template matching for classification or to assess the similarity between two images. Two images that are similar will have a large projection or correlation coefficient. It's 10 minutes to 12. Let's take a break for 10 minutes, and then we will go from 12 o'clock to 1 o'clock.